When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey parents, looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, joined as always by Mike Tagliere. If you don't already follow us on Twitter, it's at BobbyFantasyPro and at Mike Tagliere NFL. And our guest today is Elliot Crist. He's the Director of Production and Analytics at the Quant Edge, and Elliot's at his name, Elliot Crist. Elliot, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, man. I had fun when we did the offseason one, and I'm excited to be back.
Absolutely. We've got a fun show planned for today. We're going to be talking about post-hype sleepers, and then we're going to continue our divisional preview series, talking about the AFC West. There's a lot of fantasy-relevant players in that division. Tags, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. It was a day that I woke up and heard unfortunate news about Robbie Gould signing a four-year deal with the 49ers, which means ultimately that he's not coming back to the Bears, so that was disappointing.
Yeah, that's a bummer. One of my best friends is a Bears fan, and he took Robbie Gould in the fifth round 1 year in fantasy football. And I'll never forget that. Every time I hear Robbie Gould, I think, people do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. The kickers, it's not for fantasy football, but more of like a NFL standpoint, because I think the Bears are a contender, and a kicker can help you put you, like, obviously the Bears knows they would have been to the second round of the playoffs had they actually had a kicker that could make that kick.
So guys, it's like really cold in my basement a lot of times, so I just keep my Fantasy Pro sweatshirt down here because it is so comfortable. I'm actually rocking it right now. Tags, are you wearing fantasy football gear today?
Today I actually just got home from the gym. We recorded, so no, I don't right now, but I can say that I did receive my shirts in the mail, and the shirts are extremely high quality.
They're comfortable, aren't they, man?
For what we're charging, and like the thing is like they're longer. Like a lot of shirts that I order, I have an issue. Like for whatever reason, I'm 6'2", 210 pounds, and for whatever reason, I have an issue when it comes to shirt sizes. Like it fits my shoulders, but then it's too short on my torso. But these shirts actually fit extremely well. I would definitely recommend you guys check them out, and they're extremely cheap too. So we've made them affordable for everyone.
Yeah, you can check them out at shop.fantasybros.com. And also we've got a contest where you can get some of this swag for free. It's called Rags for Swag. Tags, can you tell them a little bit about it?
Oh, this is a fun one. We are doing a competition where it's basically we're saying who looks like terrible in their sports gear. I mean, Elliot probably has a lot of Jets gear, so that's going to look terrible anyways. But if you have like a shirt, like an old jersey that's tattered, torn, whatever, you have an old hat, we want you to send pictures of those to our social media accounts. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to take the person with the oldest, rattiest, worst looking shirt and send them some swag as well as a hat. We're going to send a hat out as well.
Not just one person. We're sending it to quite a few.
It's a pretty cool contest. We're just trying to hook you up if you have some not so swell clothes right now.
All right, guys, let's get right into the post-hype sleepers, and we're going to let you go first, Elliot. Who do you like this year as a post-hype sleeper?
A couple guys I really like, and, you know, Bobby, I know you're going to be excited about one of them, is David Moore. You know, we look at Russell Wilson, who's one of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL, and Moore's going to be a top three receiver on that team. He's a freak athlete, and all of his passes are going to be downfield. He had a higher ADOT than Tyler Lockett last year. Lockett just had all-time efficiency, and David Moore had basically all-time inefficiency. But in best ball, especially a guy that's going in the 16th round to get those kind of plays, he's going to have some big weeks in that offense. And I'm not necessarily worried about the lack of volume in the passing game because he's the kind of guy that's making plays down the field. Similar player that I'm excited about is Robert Foster, right? This guy had the third highest ADOT in the NFL last year through the second half of the season. Him and Josh Allen showed great chemistry. They caught 22 of 33 passes with an ADOT of 22 yards. I mean, that's absurd. The kind of big play guys at the end that, and he fits what Buffalo wants to do, right? So he doesn't necessarily need a ton of volume because all of his receptions are going to be down the field. They like to just, Allen scrambles and chucks it deep. So Robert Foster's another guy that I really like. A boring guy is Jack Doyle, who actually outsnapped Eric Ebron every game but one last year. It's a situation where I don't think he's necessarily going to put up massive numbers by any stretch of the imagination, but he's just such a safe back-end tight end. That those are a couple late-round guys I like. And if you want a quarterback and a running back as well, I'll go with Chase Edmonds of the Arizona Cardinals. I think he's in a position where he's going to get 20 to 25% of the snaps, and they're going to run 75-80 plays a game. And if there is an injury to David Johnson, he could put up massive numbers. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick is my late-round YOLO quarterback. I mean, I really like Dak Prescott as a QB1, but if I'm completely punting the quarterback position, Fitzpatrick, what, had 9.62 yards per attempt. The Dolphins are going to be bad. He does not care if the right decision. He's chucking it all over the field. As a complete dart throw, last round quarterback guy, that's who I like. Since I'm trying to avoid just the, I really like Dak Prescott, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson because of the rushing upside guys.
Wow, Elliot, I think we might be the same person. You just named like my entire list. Let's go one at a time here. I want to talk a little bit about Ryan Fitzpatrick. Are you concerned that Josh Rosen, they just might give him the job, even though Ryan Fitzpatrick, was on pace for 5,800 yards if he had played a full 64 quarters?
I mean, I think that's completely baked into his cost, right? It's a situation where, even if he's only playing 8 games and Rosen takes over the second half of the year, that's fine by me. I mean, Fitzpatrick's going to have a lot of passing volume. We've seen him last year be a very fantasy reliable quarterback. And even on the Jets, I mean, Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, that team almost made the playoffs because he's willing to chuck the ball all over the field. He probably doesn't play 16 games, but if I'm taking him in round 18 of an 18-team draft as my quarterback 3, he's probably going to be able to start 2 or 3 games for me. So I'm not that worried about it. And apparently Rosen hasn't looked good, and Fitzpatrick has a significant lead right now, according to the last report I read. So it's a situation where it's a complete punt, and there's really no downside here, but there's quarterback 1 upside based on what we've seen historically.
I think that's a good way to put it. And Tags, I'm also interested in the impact that it would have on the wide receivers. You've said before that Devontae Parker could be a wide receiver 3 if Fitzpatrick's to start.
Yeah, that's basically the biggest debate here for me is like between those two quarterbacks. I don't think that Fitzpatrick would even have QB1 upside if he did take over as a starter, just because I see this as a bottom 10 scoring offense. And over the last 7 years with my research, no quarterback part of a bottom 10 scoring team has ever finished as a QB1 in terms of points per game. So I feel like he'd have some streaming weeks for sure. But that's the thing is like you're looking in that territory with Case Keenum and Joe Flacco. So I'm not really going to draft those guys. It's more for like a 2 quarterback format. But the important thing here is those wide receivers, because Devontae Parker, I would have much more confidence drafting him if I knew that Ryan Fitzpatrick was a starter. And as I've mentioned, though, the issue is that Josh Rosen, he's been putting in a very bad situation in both aspects, right? So he played for a terrible offense last year. I don't know if there was a quarterback in the league that would have succeeded behind that offensive line in that offense last year with those wide receivers, because they were down.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers would have thrown for 4,000 yards, man, let's be honest, with a broken leg.
I mean, 4,000 yards is not much in today's NFL, but I'm saying Rosen as a rookie, he was thrown into a really bad situation. And now you could argue that it may have gotten worse. Like the offensive line in Miami outside of Laremy Tunsil is garbage. The receivers there, we have a few guys that could be potential hit or miss. I don't want to base all of our opinions on what Adam Gase did to these players, but it's Brian Flores, another defensive minded head coach that is working. We don't know what to expect from the offense. And I just think that Miami, they didn't trade too much for Rosen. I think they got him for a great price to find out if he is potentially their franchise quarterback. But here's the problem. They need to find this out by the beginning of the 2020 draft, because if Josh Rosen isn't the answer, they need to take a quarterback in the first round. And the only way to find out if Josh Rosen is the guy that they think or hope he can be is to put him on the field. And that's why I ultimately believe that Josh Rosen's going to start. It's just how long of a leash do they give him in Miami?
So can I make 2 points real quick? One, I completely agree with you. I'm not drafting Ryan Fitzpatrick with the hope that he is quarterback 1. strictly a streaming quarterback as your quarterback three. I do agree with you that Fitzpatrick's much better for the receivers. I really like Kenny Stills with the way Fitzpatrick's willing to throw the ball downfield. But Devontae Parker, you know, he is the big body guy like the Brandon Marshall that he kind of fell in love with. So there's definitely an argument to be made there. And I don't disagree about Josh Rosen playing snaps. I do think Fitzpatrick's better for all the weapons.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Jack Doyle, okay? Because I'm a big Jack Doyle fan, but, you know, he did have a major kidney issue that shut down his season, and he's not quite back yet. Does this concern you that maybe he won't have the same role as he had last year, Elliot?
It's a concern. I mean, I'm not a doctor, right? But anytime you start damaging any type of internal organs, that's not great. I still do think he's a more complete player than Eric Ebron, and he'll play more snaps. And it's a high-octane offense where Andrew Luck's throwing the ball 40 times a game. And if he plays 70% of the snaps, I think it's attractive. What really attracts me about Jack Doyle, because it's funny, because before this year, I've always been a never Jack Doyle guy. But this year, his price is just so cheap, especially if people listening are doing any drafts or on draft, right, the best ball challenge. When I can get him in the 14th round, he's just like the perfect floor complement to some of these high upside tight ends. I think that's really the role that I'm looking for him to be in.
I'm so happy that you said this. I agree about Jack Doyle. He is still regaining weight, so he hasn't started practicing yet. I think he's going to play, though. When he came back for those four games, and really it was 3.5 because he got hurt in the third quarter of that fourth game, he out-targeted Eric Ebron 18-12 in that time. You mentioned he was still playing more snaps. He was fifth in terms of receiving yards, sixth in terms of touchdowns, maybe vice versa on those two in those 4 weeks. And that was when everyone thought Eric Ebron was still the starter. Now, Ebron did still score in those weeks, even though he only played 35% of the snaps. But I think that just goes to show how much Andrew Luck loves tight ends, and that if Jack Doyle's healthy, and it looks like he will be, he's going to be useful. I think he's a top 12 tight end, even if Eric Ebron is too.
I don't see a situation where both of them could be top 12 tight ends, but I do think that it's possible that Doyle is the tight end to own there. And the reason I say that is because Ebron was used more as a receiver, whereas Doyle was the traditional tight end, and he's going to play. He's going to play more snaps than Eric Ebron. The question is, you know, how is he bouncing back from the injury? I think Devin Funchess hurts Eric Ebron more than he does Jack Doyle, just because it's the whole receiver idea, whereas they're lining him out wide, and it's like now they have a big body in Devin Funchess. So this one is going to be interesting for sure. It's a battle to watch. I think they're both going to have production. I think it might be a little bit sporadic, especially with the new options in Funchess and Paris Campbell if they get involved in the offense. So it's just I don't mind this call at all, though, because I think it would not surprise me at all if Jack Doyle outperformed Eric Ebron this year.
I think it's just such a situation where you're talking about the cost, and it's a tight end with a good offense. After the top three tight ends alive, there's so much unknown here. I will say that I think Eric Ebron is the most overvalued tight end in all of fantasy this year. His touchdown regression is going to come down. You mentioned Funchess, and Doyle's going to cut into his workload. You know, if he's only playing 35-40% of snaps, his numbers are going to come way down. And to draft it in that seventh-round range, where I've been seeing him go lately, is crazy. I mean, he went 401 in the SFB that I'm in. That's way too high.
That is kind of ridiculous, and I'm sorry if that's anyone's team out there who's listening to this, and I'm kind of laughing at it, but I agree. Ebron is very overrated. I had Chris Herndon as the most overrated tight end. Now I don't think anyone's going to draft him because he's got the four-game suspension. Tex, we haven't talked about that, by the way. I mean, even in a best ball league, would you want him if he's ADP tight end 16 or 17 now?
I didn't want anything to do with Herndon before, and I don't want anything to do with him now. I think we all knew his suspension was coming. I think a lot of people expected two games, but even then, he's a streaming tight end is what he is. And even he's not even a great one. With the addition of Le'Veon Bell there in New York, it's going to severely cut into his targets. And again, they took Jamison Crowder, who eats up some of those targets over the middle of the field as well. Adam Gase runs a very slow offense. There's just not a lot to like there.
Would you rather have him or Jimmy Graham?
Graham, 100%. I will take Graham all day.
What do you think, Elliot? If you're not getting Jack Doyle, who's your tight end two that you're fond of?
I end up with a lot of Mark Andrews, Dallas Goedert for upside. Jimmy Graham, I would definitely take him over Chris Herndon. Basically, here's my rule with the New York Jets. If your name's not Robbie Anderson, I don't want you on my fantasy teams.
So you're a Robbie Anderson guy then. I've been starting to come around. Apparently they've been trying to use him in a much different role this year, trying to get him to have more.
They're trying to extend his route tree. I saw the thing about Adam Gase saying instead of having him run the two routes, we want to extend. And I don't know if that was a shot at Anderson, like him trying to say that Anderson can't run more than those routes. I mean, I'm not saying that, but the way that Gase said it, it sounded like we need him to run more than one or two routes because we need him to be a more well-rounded receiver. And yeah, that's never a bad thing, obviously. But again, even Robbie Anderson, his cost has gone so high that even I can't draft him. If you have him as your wide receiver four, I'm good with that. But he moved inside like the top 30 for some time. I don't know if he's fallen out of there, but yeah, I'm not.
No, you're right, dude. What in the world?
Yeah, he went too high. Like, that's the thing. I just don't think there's going to be any consistent performers from the Jets roster. That's all. And Elliot knows that.
He's going before Allen Robinson. Okay, Elliot, would you take Robbie Anderson over Allen Robinson?
I lean Allen Robinson over Robbie Anderson.
Okay. Whew.
First off, we're debating two of my favorite receivers this year at value. And you're absolutely right. Anderson's value has shot up while Robinson's has kind of maintained. You know, early in the offseason when I was getting Robbie in the eighth and ninth round, I couldn't stop drafting him. He is one of the cheaper wide receiver ones. He did, you know, crush in the second half of the season, right? I think it was 8 or more targets in 7 of his last 8 games. He has that big play role. Him and Darnold really did seem like they're connecting, and he's got that elite speed and that game-breaking ability. And we've seen him over a couple years, you know, have some really big weeks. If he ever can do it consistently, he could become a really dynamic fantasy asset. I think the really, really big concern is Adam Gase. If he tries to change what Robbie Anderson does, that's not exciting to me. Adam Gase has really bumped heads with a lot of players in the past, and Robbie Anderson is kind of a head case. And that's probably being nice about it based on his history and some of the stuff he's done, you know, spitting in a cop's face. You know, it's a situation, or security guard's face. I forget which one. Maybe both, actually. They're two separate incidents. But you know, Gase makes me a little bit nervous, but Anderson is the only Jet I'm really considering, unless Le'Veon Bell's price tag really drops. But right now, I think he doesn't deserve to be in the round one conversation, but he keeps going round one.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. I keep thinking his price is going to drop, but as the more casual fans get in there, they're going to see Le'Veon Bell, and they're going to draft him in the top 10. I saw him go number 6 in a best ball championship league yesterday. Melvin Gordon, by the way, we'll talk about this later. He dropped out of the first round in both best ball championship leagues that I drafted yesterday, and I gobbled him up in one of them. I was really happy that he fell to me. So, you know, I want to pick your mind on David Moore. We've talked about him enough, so it doesn't need to be extensive, but what do you think his ceiling really is?
I think he'd be a wide receiver 3. I think he's going to be a great streaming guy. He's more attractive to me in best ball than season-long leagues because it's going to be difficult to understand when his 4 targets turn into 100 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Sure. Okay. And the final guy that you brought up was Chase Edmonds. Tags, I want to ask you a little bit about him. Obviously, David Johnson's going to be there, but Elliot's right. If they run 70, maybe even 75 plays a game, David Johnson's not going to get 25 carries a game. So could Chase Edmonds be useful, kind of like Mark Ingram was the last few years?
It's possible he gets that like Austin Eckler type role in the offense. I mean, they're going to be throwing a lot and they're running a lot of 10 personnel or just the one running back in the field, and they might not have any tight ends out there, and that's fine. And he could be a pass catcher. Chase Edmonds has the ability to do that. So yeah, if they're running 75 plays, I don't know if I can get to 75 plays per game because I think their defense is bad enough to the point where they're not going to be able to control the clock the way that they think they're going to. Like, I think the opponents are just going to play keep away from that offense. But I do, 70 plays is a realistic possibility. And if there's even 70 plays, it's rare to find a running back playing over 80% of the snaps. So once you get into that territory, you could find some production for sure. And it, you know, is it like a Austin Eckler or Chris Thompson of years past? Like, you know, you might get some usable performances, especially in like a PPR format.
I like that. I haven't even considered that at all, Elliot. I'm glad you brought it up. Now, Tags, let's move on to a couple of our post-hype sleepers, and Elliot can kind of pick our brain or challenge us, whatever he wants to do. Who do you want to start with, Tags?
I think Anthony Miller is someone that I'm gravitating towards a lot more. I like Allen Robinson, but Anthony Miller, what he did in his rookie season in the NFL, I think was particularly special when you consider the injuries. You know, we've talked about the fact that he dislocated his shoulder, you know, 5 times. You know, he was coming off a broken foot at the end of his last year at Memphis. So there was a lot of things stacked against Anthony Miller playing, you know, in a first year in the Bears offense, you know, with a brand new quarterback. There was so many things that, you know, were stacked against him. And I just feel like Anthony Miller is a massive part of the success that the Bears are going to have on offense. And their defense, let's be real, they're going to regress this year. There is no way that the Bears defense can play at that level. It just, every year we see the dominant defense take a slight step back. Even if it's a small step back, we're going to see more pass attempts. And Anthony Miller, again, big part of that, and he creates such a mismatch in the slot for the Bears. So I like Anthony Miller as a potential breakout.
What do you think about that, Elliot?
Miller was one of my favorite receivers coming out last year. Like Tags mentioned, his injury history is definitely a concern. His route running is elite, though, and his ability to get open is fantastic. He's been a playmaker in the end zone, especially too in college. And you know, Tags is 100% right. The Bears have to regress on defense, which should lead to more passing attempts. Hopefully Trubisky's healthy as well, because we saw when he was banged up, his fantasy production kind of fell off a cliff. He had a lot of spike weeks with his both rushing upside and playmaking ability. So I'm not against Anthony Miller at all. I think he's clearly going to be the wide receiver two there. I think he takes up some more of Taylor Gabriel's role. I also think Allen Robinson, you know, we see more playoff game-like performances out of him. But where Anthony Miller's going, you know, I'm such a big cost guy that there's upside at his cost. So I'm more than comfortable, you know, taking my shots with Anthony Miller.
All right, guys, here's my first player. You all know I like Anthony Miller as well. Not quite as much as some of the other guys, Devontae Parker, David Moore, as we've talked about pretty extensively. My first is also a wide receiver, and I don't know if most of you would consider him a sleeper. I guess this is more for those casual fans that don't really know just how good this player is, but there was a little bit of hype with Dante Pettis going in the second round last year, and then he didn't exactly produce, but only because he didn't start playing until the end of the season, and when he did, it was with Nick Mullins, but he looked very good. I mean, we want to talk about Pierre Garçon leading the league in receptions in 2013, 113 in Kyle Shanahan's offense. I think Pettis is a more talented version of Pierre Garçon. He's got Jimmy G, who, remember, in five games, didn't really know the playbook in San Francisco, turned Marquise Goodwin, who's frankly just a deep play receiver, 29 receptions, 384 yards in five games. That translates to 93 receptions, 1,229 yards over a full 16 games. Granted, it was a smaller sample size, but Jimmy G was on pace for 4,900 yards. If he does that, Dante Pettis is going to go off, guys.
Even Garoppolo regressed, though, in 2018. Like, he didn't look as good as he did in 2017, which is weird because he had the entire offseason and, you know, they added some threats at wide receiver. But I don't know what the ceiling is for any of the 49ers receivers, just because it's like these running backs are going to eat into it. Kittle's going to get a whole lot of targets. That's my issue. I like Pettis. I think he's a fine receiver. But what's the actual ceiling? Like, what do you think the actual ceiling is with Dante Pettis this year, Elliot?
Yeah, I mean, Debo's a question, Kittle's a question, right? The fact that, you know, Goodwin's still there. I like Pettis the player. He's an elite route runner, which is, that's the number one thing I love out of a wide receiver, because that's a guy that's going to stick around the NFL and get open, have the opportunity to make big plays. With Pettis, I wasn't buying as much because he was at the same cost as Christian Kirk, and that's where I was going more times than not. But now that Kirk's ADP has risen and Pettis's hasn't really caught up, that's one of the guys I'm looking for in that range.
You know, I also wanted to mention, Elliot, I meant to say this after you named your guys, but there were quite a few of them. David Moore right now, his ADP is wide receiver 87. The expert consensus, which is, you know, we take 80 analysts across the industry and say, this is what the analysts as a whole think about this player. They've got him 70, so 17 spots higher. And then the other guy you talked about, Robert Foster, ADP, wide receiver 77. That's undrafted in almost all leagues. ECR 54, he's plus 23. Tags, we haven't talked about Robert Foster much, and, you know, I'm a little bit worried about them bringing in John Brown. They've also got Zay Jones. You know, who knows what this offense is going to do, but Elliot's right. Robert Foster and Josh Allen clicked. He's the perfect type of receiver for Josh Allen.
I don't know if he starts. That's the issue, right? Like, they bring in John Brown. They bring in Cole Beasley for whatever reason. They have Zay Jones on the roster. I was waiting to see if they were going to cut or trade Zay Jones. I thought that would have made sense. But now I don't know what they do. You know, like, Zay Jones is supposed to be that possession receiver that could play both inside and outside. You have Robert Foster, who's the field stretcher there. But then you have John Brown, who could do the same thing. He's not a possession receiver. You don't have a tight end that you could rely on. I don't know what the Bills did this offseason. They added a lot of names. I'll give than that. There was a lot of free agents this team snagged, and there's such a small sample size with him that it's I have a hard time latching on to any of these Bills receivers, including John Brown, who I'm a big fan of in terms of his talent. But I have John Brown outside my top 60 wide receivers ranked just because I feel like he's going to be very unpredictable with Josh Allen. And I think the same thing applies to Robert Foster, who now has better competition for targets because John Brown's definitely an upgrade in regards to what they had last year. And then Cole Beasley is a slot guy. I guess they bring him in for a reason. They have like 90 running backs in the roster. TJ Yeldon can catch some passes. I don't know what the Bills are doing.
Well, and Josh Allen only completes 14 passes a game. Like, that might go up to 15 this year, but...
That's the issue.
That's not enough for me.
I think there's going to be some splash performances, and I think that there's something to be said if you want to take Robert Foster in late rounds, like, best ball league. But in terms of weekly production, I don't know if I could draft anybody from this team. It's just like, I try and avoid those bad teams if possible.
Now, Elliot, when I watched the film on Robert Foster last year, I was excited. I thought, oh, this guy's just, you know, in the right place at the right time, getting snaps and everything. And then I watched him. This is a quality wide receiver. I don't think he's just a deep threat. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he can develop into more than that as well. You know, just to speak on what Tag said, though, I completely agree that there's so much unknown. Again, it's built into his cost, right? But this is very much a best ball guy. He's going to be a late round guy you can stream. Maybe you're behind and you want to hope that his five targets go down the field because that's what the Bills do. You know, your point about Josh Allen completing 14 passes per game is not wrong, but it's a situation where Foster's ADOT was 22 yards down the field. Cole Beasley was probably the most confusing signing of the entire offseason in terms of what they do. I just don't get why they got an underneath receiver for Josh Allen when he never wants to throw underneath. But for me, I think Foster can take that next step. I think he's incredibly cheap. He's going to be nearly free. He's a late-round guy that you could get in season-long stuff to potentially stream if you're an underdog because he's got wide receiver one potential based on the way where he gets his targets and what he can do with them. But he's very much a best ball guy for me right now as a late-round guy who's got major upside.
Yep, I think that makes sense. You know, I haven't actually drafted Robert Foster in any leagues yet, but, you know, I've probably done 100, 120 mock drafts on our Draft Wizard simulation software. And I've been drafting him in quite a few. You know, I draft from every single position. For whatever league I'm preparing for, I do it from every position just so I know what to expect. And I usually do it multiple times. And I feel comfortable getting Robert Foster in the 14th or 15th round. I think he's got upside. And I think he's safe most weeks just because I think that he probably is the best receiver on that team right now. Tags, how many drafts do you think you've done on our draft simulation software?
I've been doing a lot more best ball than I have even on the mock draft stuff because I know that stuff's coming up. But maybe in the range of 30.
So that's probably why you've been losing to me in these mock draft episodes?
Obviously, that's why I'm losing to you. Not because you've done like 120 of them.
Yeah, you know, if you guys want to do all these mock drafts, it really does help. Practice makes perfect. And you can see on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros that Tags does a mock draft and he explains all the benefits, all the, you know, little tools that we have built in where you can sync it with your league live so that you can see what the experts are recommending. It's like having the experts in your back pocket during the draft or just in a war room with you. Check out draftwizard.fantasypros.com if you haven't already tried it. You are going to love it. It is my single favorite tool on the entire website.
It's basically what a lot of people know Fantasy Pros for.
Yeah. All right, Tags, why don't you give us one more post-hype sleeper? I'll do the same, and then we'll jump on over and talk about the AFC West.
Let's go with John Ross. John Ross is a guy for me that I would take over Robert Foster just because I feel like John Ross is the better player in terms of like sheer talent. So the Bengals, another big hit came out. So the Bengals lost Clint Bowling, their guard. He actually just announced his retirement. And then obviously they drafted Jonah Williams. He's out for the year. So their offensive line is starting to have issues, which is going to really affect Joe Mixon. That's going to hurt the run game. The passing game, Zach Taylor has said that he's going to basically blueprint it off the Rams offense, which means, and if you kind of take the players and you kind of mix and match, you know, Tyler Boyd is essentially the Cooper Kupp. You have AJ Green, who's probably going to be Robert Woods. And then you have Brandon Cooks, who's essentially like the John Ross. So if that's the role that he has in the offense, it's very valuable. I don't think that he's getting 100 plus targets. I'm going to be clear about that. But John Ross, you know, he could have that breakout season because he is more of a route runner than people realize. People think that he's just a speed guy. He's not. And that's why I think in the red zone last year, you saw him be a better red zone receiver than I think anybody expected, myself included. But it was just a timing thing between him and Andy Dalton. They could never get on the same page. The offensive play calling was very vanilla under Marvin Lewis. So I'm hoping that Zach Taylor brings a different vibe to the Bengals offense and hopefully revives John Ross's career because this might be it for him.
Now, Elliot, are you going to put up with that? Him saying John Ross over Robert Foster, man?
I can't go that far, but I completely understand his line of thinking. And one of the things I really like that we're doing is we're giving legit sleepers or late-round guys or last-round guys. Right? We're not. I see sometimes out there where people tell you a sleeper and you look and his ADP is in the fifth round. It's like, that's not what a sleeper is, right? We're going kind of extreme guys with upside here where they can find a role on an offense. And, you know, if they're going to run basically strictly 11 personnel and Ross is going to be on the field 90% of the time, 80% of the time, I think Tags is right that he does most fit that Brandon Cooks role or even the Sammy Watkins role a year before, right? That vertical type guy, deep down the field player, that's what he's known for. He's incredibly quick beyond just the straight line speed. You know, his injury history is a major concern. The Bengals should be behind. You know, one big concern is that offensive line, like Tag said, is going to be a disaster with, you know, I can't believe a Bengals first round rookie got injured and is basically missing the entire rookie year again. I have no problem with John Ross as a late round flyer. I would take Foster over him, but he's free. You know, I'm doing, you guys mentioned your mock drafts. I'm probably in the hundreds now for best ball. Like, John Ross is a 17th, 18th round guy. He's free. There's really no downside in taking a guy that you might think sees 80% of snaps and has an ADOT above like 16, 17 yards.
I agree with that. Yeah. I'm not going to fight you over John Ross, Tags. I think that your line of thinking is perfect on that one. I'm going to go a little bit more shallow again, just because we just did the sleeper episode and I just pulled out Bruce Anderson and Jeff Swain the other day. So this is a player we've talked about a fair amount, and I don't especially like talking about quarterbacks because I don't think they matter that much. I'm mostly going to be streaming in my leagues. With that said, I think that Jameis Winston is going to be a stud this year. You look at his 2018 campaign, you'll see 11 games, which implies 44 quarters played, but let's not forget that in three of those 11 games, he only played half the game. So rather, Winston only had 38 quarters, where he played 9.5 games. In that time, he produced nearly 3,000 yards, which if you translate it to a full season, we're talking about 5,039 yards. Only Big Ben and Patrick Mahomes beat that mark last year. One of those guys lost Antonio Brown and threw 675 passes. The other one may be losing Tyreek Hill for an extended period of time, and he's due for some regression as well. But with Winston, he's just turning 25 years old. He's still got Mike Evans. He's got Chris Godwin. He's got O.J. Howard. He's going to pass to Cameron Bray. I think it's possible Winston can surpass 5,000 passing yards this year, guys.
I think he's going to throw the ball all over the field, and he's got elite weapons. It's really interesting, of all the quarterbacks that have ever played with DeSean Jackson, he had the lowest yards per attempt with DeSean Jackson on the field.
Isn't that odd?
Because Jackson has just made every quarterback so much better. We're talking about like guys like Colt McCoy have put up legit numbers with DeSean Jackson, and James Winston didn't. You know, Evans, Chris Godwin, O.J. Howard's the most efficient tight end in the NFL, probably the best athlete at the position. You know, and that's no knock to Kelsey or Kittle. But just, you know, he's got big-time playmakers. Bruce Arians loves to go vertical. They don't really have a running game. Their defense is bad. They're going to throw the ball a lot. And the thing that's really nice, too, is with Fitzpatrick gone, he's not going to be looking over his shoulder all the time because he's going to have some three-interception games. Jameis Winston has never seen a linebacker over the middle that he does not think is open. I just think it's a situation where at his price, he's going to put up 300-yard games, three touchdowns, two interceptions. But interceptions really don't hurt us that much. In fantasy football.
You know what? Whenever, Tags, I've seen this too. Whenever, you know, one of us on Twitter or any fantasy analyst goes out and says, you know, I like Jameis Winston this year, there's always that person, no matter what you say. You could say, you know, Michael Jordan was a good basketball player and somebody's going to fight you. But when you say you like Jameis Winston in fantasy, there's always that casual fan who doesn't understand how to like extrapolate stats out to a full season, or, you know, look at the offensive scheme or the playmakers around him, or, you know, just ignore the difference between NFL and fantasy football. People come after you so hard if you like Jameis Winston, and it shows in the ADP. His public ADP is quarterback 16. He's going five spots after Tom Brady. The expert consensus has him at quarterback 11. I've got him up at quarterback 6. Elliot, how high do you have him?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's right after that Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray tier. So it's a situation, too, where when I'm in leagues with pros or sharper guys, Winston goes way higher. I think everyone is kind of on board with this idea that he's going to chuck the ball all over the field with elite weapons, with a good coach. And it's a situation where he's going to put up fantasy numbers. I mean, 5,000 yards and 30 to 35 touchdowns is well within the range of outcomes. So, you know, I think QB 7 to QB 9 is kind of where I see him. And, you know, like you said, if you're in a public league where he's going QB 17, that's stealing.
All right, guys, we're going to jump on over and talk about the AFC West here in just a second. But first, I want to say congratulations to the winner of the Travis Kelce signed Chiefs helmet giveaway. It's Anna from Colorado, so congratulations to her. And by the way, guys, if you haven't already checked out Pristine Auction, maybe you've got a birthday coming up for your dad or something along those lines, or you just want to treat yourself, put something beautiful in your cave, you can find some of your favorite players out there. They auction off hundreds of items every single day. Tags, if I look on there, I'm always finding something I want to bid on. Do you have your eye on anything right now?
I usually do, and actually, I usually bid, and then I keep looking, and then I'm like, oh my god, I wanted to bid on this instead, and it's like, I need to look through everything before I start bidding, because I'll end up finding a lot of different things, and I've been struggling what Giants player I wanted to do, and I actually found an Odell Beckham one, that's a Giants helmet. I'm bidding on that. I don't really care that he's not on the Giants anymore. He's still one of the greatest Giants to play on the team, like, of all time. He might be the best Giant of all time, so I really don't care about that. So I lost out. I bid on Leonard Fournette. I was outbid on that. But that might be for the best. I don't know. I need to sometimes let go of those players that haven't exactly produced the way I wanted them to.
You need to get a Jeff Swaim signed Jags helmet.
Man. Absolutely not.
Okay, we'll see about that at the end of the year. Anyway, when you guys sign up at Pristine Auction, it's free. You don't have to pay anything unless you win the bid. And when you do sign up, there's a registration code right there at the top. If you enter Fantasy Pros, all one word, you're going to get $5 off at Pristine Auction. Plus, it tells them that we're sending people their way. That way, we can keep doing these contests like the Travis Kelce one we just had going on. Again, that's pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. All right, guys, let's jump on over to the AFC West now. Obviously, we're starting with the Chiefs, who were amazing last year. Elliot, do you have Patrick Mahomes as your number one fantasy quarterback? Tags and I both have Aaron Rodgers there.
Oh, I have Deshaun Watson there. For me, with Patrick Mahomes, I will probably have none of him this year. His cost has dropped. The Tyreek Hill uncertainty is a big deal. If Hill's out, I don't think Mahomes finishes as a top two or three quarterback this year. The Hill situation, I have no idea if he's going to be suspended 2 games or 16. I think the player I'm most interested in right now is Travis Kelce, because he can put up wide receiver one numbers, right? Half point PPR last year, I think he put up, 280 or something like that. It's a situation where he gives you such a head start at the tight end position that I'm a big fan of his. And the wide receiver, and Damon Williams is another guy I'm on from the Chiefs. I'm very high on the role. Now, am I high on the player? Not particularly. I mean, Damon Williams, before that stretch at the end of the season last year, hadn't really done anything. He's always been like a solid receiving back, but he performed incredibly well. And if he's going to get that 70-75% snap rate, he's going to put up major numbers in a big-time offense he can be used in the receiving game. So Travis Kelce and Damian Williams are the two guys I'm buying at cost. And Patrick Mahomes is basically a complete fade for me unless he drops like 2 rounds in ADP.
I didn't think I was going to get any Patrick Mahomes. I got him in the 6th round last night in that draft best ball championship. And then I paired him with Aaron Rodgers in the 8th. So those are the only two quarterbacks I drafted. That's not that much draft equity. And I got probably the two best guys in the game.
That's a situation where 6th round, I can at least talk myself into it.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah. I love what you said about Deshaun Watson, by the way. As long as he can stay healthy and not get his ribs crushed in again. He got sacked 62 times last year. And he's got Kiki QT, Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins this year. And he got so much better last year, too, in terms of efficiency. I love that call.
Yeah, Deshaun Watson can definitely contend for the number one quarterback. In our hot take show, I said that Deshaun Watson outscores Patrick Mahomes. That was a hot take. And I'm with Elliot in the fact that I think it can definitely happen. I think there's I'd say it's at least a 40% chance of happening. I think there's a lot of regression with Mahomes. I think Tyreek Hill gets suspended for at least 4 games. I just don't see any way that doesn't happen. When you consider the fact that Ezekiel Elliott didn't face any criminal charges in court, it was something that took place outside of court. And, you know, Tyreek Hill has a history with this stuff. If there was no history, I understand why people come at me and say, he's innocent until proven guilty. But when there's a history of with assaults, you know, and it was bad assault, and he admitted to it. He pleaded guilty to it. So there's a history here. I don't see any way he doesn't get at least 4 games. So Mahomes is going to suffer through those 4 games. They lost their starting center, Mitch Morse, to the Bills. I'm not buying Mahomes even close to his ADP.
And he lost Kareem Hunt, too. Let's not forget that. I mean, it's not like Damian Williams is Kareem Hunt.
He performed at the level that Kareem Hunt did, basically. But yeah, Mahomes, if you get him in the 5th round, okay. But he's never going to fall there, so I'm never going to have him.
Tags, over under, and Elliot, same for you. Over under 35 touchdowns for Mahomes. He had 50 last year.
I'll say over that.
Yeah, that number sounds about right. I have him at like 37.
Yeah, that's a 6% touchdown rate. Last year he was at 8.6, which is not anywhere close to sustainable. We've said this every year from Derek Carr to Matt Ryan to Carson Wentz. Every single year this happens, and then guess what? They drop down. Touchdown rates are so volatile. Now, Mahomes is great, so his is probably going to be around 6%. It could be north of that, and then I'll look like a fool, even though it's probably going to end up around his career 6%. It could be way below that. It could be like 4.5%. Then we're talking about him borderline top 10 quarterback. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, guys. I'm just saying this is in the realm of possibilities, and that touchdown rate, it's probably not staying.
I think we all agree there. And I mean, if you're like one of those guys that's a later round quarterback, you're not going to own any Patrick Mahomes, and that's okay. But the real question here, Elliot, is what do you do about Sammy Watkins? So his current ADP, you know, it's varying from site to site. It varies from draft to draft. I've seen him go as high as the, you know, top 50 player, and then he falls all the way out to the 75th player. You know, there's a wide gap. His current ADP on average is a wide receiver 25. Where do you take Sammy Watkins, knowing all this stuff about Tyreek Hill?
Listen, if you get this one right, it's going to matter a lot, right? I don't really have much Sammy. A month ago, I was seeing him go in the draft best ball championship in the fourth or fifth round. Now it tends to be the sixth or seventh because there's a lot more uncertainty around whether or not Tyreek Hill, like you mentioned, is going to get suspended 4, 6, 8 games, and Watkins can kind of step into that wide receiver one role. I think you definitely need him in the wide receiver one role at least 6, if not 8 games to justify a fourth round ADP. I'll grab him in the 7th. I'll take the shot at the upside. But once we start going much higher than that, I'm fading him. I'm fading Mecole Hardman as well.
That's the one that makes absolutely – he's being drafted right now. Average ADP is the 45th wide receiver off the board. Are you kidding me? Like,
I mean, DeMarcus Robinson's like wide receiver 85, and I like him more.
Hardman doesn't belong in the top 6, probably top 70 receivers. He didn't even catch a lot of passes in college. Like,
the number of people who said, well, he's small and fast. Tyreek Hill is small and fast. He will produce like Tyreek Hill. And I'm like, guys, you got to go back to like grade school math. This is not right.
That's pretty good. What do you think about DeMarcus Robinson? Is he someone worth taking a late shot on?
He actually, you know, his target share jumped the most in the last 2 years using the TQE injury tool when Tyreek Hill was off the field. More than Chris Conley, more than Travis Kelce, more than Sammy Watkins. You know, I think he would step into a top 3 wide receiver role. Chris Conley's gone, don't forget. That I think he's got some connection with Patrick Mahomes. He's a solid player. And at wide receiver 83, it's cheap exposure to a big-time offense. I would much rather DeMarcus Robinson, you know, in the last few rounds of a draft than Mecole Hardman in the 8th or 9th round. I think Hardman is probably the worst value in all of fantasy football.
I think you might be right, man. Now, Tags, we talked about Damian Williams and Carlos Hyde last episode. We're both, you know, giving up on Carlos Hyde, fine with Damian Williams in the 2nd round. How high would you be willing to take Travis Kelce, though, Tags? And then, Ellie, I want the same answer from you.
That's the thing. So if you figure on like a replacement player, like a value-based drafting, Travis Kelce is worth a first round pick. And I think he's going to deliver those results once again. I don't think there's any reason to doubt that. My issue is that you're assuming that you're going to be able to nail running back and or wide receiver in the following rounds. Now, if you feel like you can do that and in your draft, you know, you continually do that. Let's say you play in a home league and you dominate it. You're in the playoffs every single year. You know, there's a few guys in your league that just they really don't know too much about what they're doing. Players continually fall past where they should. Absolutely take Travis Kelce in the first. Now, if I am in an analyst league, which, you know, 90% of my leagues unfortunately are now, where it's not easy money anymore, those leagues, I can't take Travis Kelce in the first round just because it sets me up really bad. And I find myself like looking for guys that could potentially break out instead of taking a safe pick at running back or wide receiver, because I need that. I need someone to live up to an RB1 or a wide receiver one. Because if you take Kelce there, that means you're gonna be left without a top 12 running back and or wide receiver. So that's difficult to start a draft with. So Kelce, again, I understand, and value-based drafting makes sense to draft him at the end of the first round. I just can't do it myself.
All right, guys, let's move on to the other 12-4 team. I think a lot of people forget that the Chiefs didn't just outright win this division. The Chargers were 12-4 as well. I think they have the most talented roster in the AFC, even over the Patriots. They're my pick to go to the Super Bowl. Elliot, do you think that the Chiefs hold them off this year, or do you think it's the Chargers?
I think the Chargers are the more talented team. The Chargers, I mean, they charge you, though, right? Like, that's one of the things they just do. They lose games when it's big. That defense is elite. You know, pass rush tandem with Ingram and Bosa, and Derwin James is someone I love, and Casey Hayward has been such a stud for them. on offense, you know, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Hunter Henry, Phillip Rivers, improved offensive line too. You know, Lamp should be back healthy this year. I think the big question for them is Melvin Gordon, right? And, you know, to answer your question, I have no problem with picking the Chargers to win that division. I think they are the most talented team in that division. From a fantasy perspective, though, I think Melvin Gordon's the biggest question mark. And I think people are so paranoid by what just happened with Le'Veon Bell. My guess is he ends up with a new contract about a month from now. And like you mentioned, Bobby, if he's falling in the second round, I'll take him. Like, I'm no longer taking him at 106, but you mentioned the Kelsey in the first round. That's a great running back to take it for upside, especially in best ball, because he can be a top five running back. I mean, he was the most consistent guy in the NFL last year when healthy, 14 or more points in every game. So it's a situation for me where Gordon is a guy that I'm willing to buy in the dip.
I had the 106 yesterday, and I was panicking because I thought, well, David Johnson's going to be gone. Who am I going to take? It was probably going to be Kelsey is what I settled on. And then someone took DeAndre Hopkins over me and I took Kelsey. But who are you guys taking at 106 now?
Ooh, so are you saying David Johnson's gone at 105 then?
David Johnson's gone, yeah.
I take Davante Adams.
Okay. Who are you taking it, Elliot?
Yeah, I tend to go Hopkins, Adams, and Kelsey as my next three.
Okay, sounds good. So Melvin Gordon, we would take him if he... I'd take him probably if he fell to 9 or 10. Is about where I'd have him. I've got Kelsey at 6, Adams at 7, Hopkins at 8, and then I'd probably take Gordon. Gurley's starting to get in the conversation for me, guys. I'm starting to think maybe Todd Gurley belongs in that first round. Tags, what do you think? Would you take Gurley over Melvin Gordon at this point?
No, I think Gordon's going to play. I'm not worried about it. It's kind of like I was with Le'Veon Bell last year. Unfortunately, Bell was even more expensive. Now, Gordon should fall a little bit until we figure out this, but I mean, top of the second round, if you can get Melvin Gordon there, it's like, that's, to me, that's worth the risk. And it's the same area that I had Todd Gurley going in. I have no concerns about Todd Gurley not playing football in 2019. I don't have those concerns. Do I think that he loses some of his touch potential? Sure, I do. And, you know, I released a mock draft today on the website. I got a bunch of analysts from the industry together, and I took Todd Gurley at the turn on the 1-2 turn. So I took him at 13 overall, and I'm fine with that. Like, I feel like when you get into that second round, it's very rare that you have a guy on your board that you're like, this guy is definitely can't miss. And Todd Gurley is can't miss when he's on the field. Even if he has 75% of his production, that's still a top six fantasy running back. And it's all I can ask for, because I'm not going to take someone like Joe Mixon, who's dealing with a crappy offensive line and a brand new offense. We don't know if they're going to do more of a timeshare there with Giovanni Bernard, the two running backs they drafted. We don't know if James Conner is going to be carrying the workload for the Steelers. You know, they've talked about a timeshare there an awful lot. Aaron Jones, you know, these guys don't belong in that conversation. So yes, I will take Todd Gurley over those guys that have question marks, because I know when Todd Gurley's on the field, he's going to produce.
I agree. I think Dalvin Cook and Nick Chubb are kind of close, but I'd still take Gordon over those guys as well. Okay, now the wide receivers here. We've talked about Mike Williams a ton, Tags. We haven't talked about Keenan Allen that much just because he gets lost in the fold, because we're always drafting Aaron Jones and Leonard Fournette in the third round. AJ Green's there too. I mean, I'd rather have AJ Green than Keenan Allen. Elliot, what about you? Well, how do you feel about Keenan Allen?
Yeah, so I think Keenan Allen's actually one of my favorite guys as a wide receiver, you know, one or two in that third round mix, because he's got such a reliable target share, market share of the offense. If Gordon does miss time, his red zone targets are shot up without him on the field. You know, right before the Julian Edelman tier, he's kind of right there with Amari Cooper for me. You know, if you take Kelsey in the first and a running back on the comeback in the second, like a Dalvin Cook, and have a Keenan Allen in the third, I think that's a real solid start to a team.
I like it. I don't have any Keenan Allen shares, but I have no problem with him right now. I've got him as my wide receiver 12. I've got him ahead of Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Brandon Cooks. I think he's very squarely in that, you know, third tier of wide receivers. Obviously the top five, and then I think it goes Brown, Green, Cooper, Juju, Evans in the next tier. And then Keenan Allen's clearly in the final one, but Tags, I just can't pass on Fournette and Aaron Jones at the same time.
Yeah, that's the difficulty, right, is that I'm usually looking at a running back there, because I'll grab a at least one wide receiver in the first or the second, but Keenan Allen the third is not a bad idea. Like, he's another guy that when he's on the field, you know that he's going to produce for you, so I have no issue with him, especially if he's like your wide receiver two. The question is, you know, can you find your RB2 in the fourth round? And if you could do that, then awesome, because Keenan Allen's going to produce when he's on the field. He's my wide receiver 9. The question is, like, does Mike Williams take away some of that upside? You know, does that defense, the fact that they're so dominant, you know, does that mean they're going to run the ball more?
Well, and Hunter Henry, like, it's not just Mike Williams. Hunter Henry's really good, guys.
Hunter Henry is like someone that's going to obviously get some targets in the red zone too. So Keenan Allen, we could see like a 1,300 yard season, but we might see 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think so as well. Elliot, how do you feel about Mike Williams and Hunter Henry? I'm fond of them both, but I don't know how much value there is to go around in this Chargers offense.
Yeah, I mean, Tyrell Williams is gone, right? But Hunter Henry comes right back. So I think Hunter Henry impacts Mike Williams the most because Williams had done so much of his damage in the red zone. My thing with Williams is I think he's kind of being drafted at his ceiling right now when he goes in the 5th round because people are counting on those touchdowns so much. I think Henry is kind of safely my tight end 5. You know, he's right after O.J. Howard for me. But I think he's got major touchdown upside. We've seen him be an elite player when he's healthy. And he's had a full, 2 years to recover from his ACL injury. He even played in that playoff game last year. So Keenan Allen, the Chargers running backs, I think every one of them is actually a good value where they go right now. And Hunter Henry are the Chargers that I have the most interest in.
I agree with that. Let's say Melvin Gordon does get traded, Elliot. Austin Eckler moves into your top 15 running backs?
15 to 20. You know, I know he really dominated snap share when Gordon was hurt last year, but I ultimately do think that Justin Jackson's going to play a role if Gordon gets traded. And, you know, he's one of my best ball zero RB last round running backs that I tend to go after.
I agree. I love Justin Jackson. I'd love to see him get the main workhorse role. They use Austin Eckler in the same role in the third down. I think Justin Jackson could be great. He is there. There's like maybe 4 or 5 players in the NFL who are more agile in the hole and then accelerate as fast as Justin Jackson. The guy, I won't say he's an elite talent. He's pretty close, though. He is great.
He has the ability to hold up to a workload. And the reason he fell in the NFL draft is because he had so many touches on his frame coming out of Northwestern. He was a workhorse there, and he could play the workhorse role. I think he was best suited for a backup role, a guy that could walk in and dominate those touches. So, I'm with Elliot in the fact that Justin Jackson would absolutely be involved. I don't think Eckler is someone that's going to handle 18 to 22 touches per game like Melvin Gordon does. But it's all about best ball in this one for me. Like, I think Travis Benjamin is someone that offers tremendous late round value in best ball. People are overlooking him. If you go to 2016, 2017, you know, that was with Tyrell Williams in the roster, you know, over 500 yards in both seasons, 677 in 2016, 4 touchdowns in each of them.
400 of those were in 3 games. You get 3 incredible games out of Travis Benjamin. That's good enough.
And that's what I'm saying is like Mike Williams is a red zone guy. We know that. Keenan Allen, he's a fine possession receiver. We have Hunter Henry, who's another red zone guy. But Travis Benjamin is going to be that field stretcher. And they, you know, once they lost Tyrell Williams, they extended Travis Benjamin. So they obviously know he's a part of their offense. They have nobody on the depth chart that's going to compete with him for that number 3 wide receiver spot. So I think Travis Benjamin is like a steal in late round best ball.
I love that call, especially in the best ball championship, because he basically doesn't get drafted. If you do get a team through, you have to beat 27 other teams or whatever it is to advance to the next week. His ownership is going to just be on your team. So I think Travis Benjamin, hoping that he has one of those 3 weeks, you know, in the playoffs for you, this makes a lot of sense in a best ball championship kind of situation.
I like that call, guys. Okay, moving on to the next team. It's the Denver Broncos. They finished 6-10. I still think they've got a little bit of talent on their defense. The offense is not going to do enough. They've got a pretty good running game with Phillip Lindsay, who's not quite ready, and Royce Freeman. Obviously, they're not going to compete in the NFL, but they can help you in fantasy. What do you think about these two running backs here, Elliot?
So I was out on Phillip Lindsay, but his ADP has fallen so much that I see him go in the 6th round at times that I'm willing to take a shot on him there. For some zero RB teams, I'll take Royce Freeman. I know he did well against 8 in the box and was constantly in bad situations last year, but I don't necessarily see that changing much. Cortland Sutton could take the next step, and he's like a dangerous downfield receiver, and that's what Joe Flacco has. You know, he hypothetically has that ability to help with, even though he has a really low yards per attempt throughout his career. Emmanuel Sanders, I'm not drafting a guy 6 months off an Achilles tear, regardless of what Vine video comes out or whatever it was. You know, Bayshon Hamilton, as everybody calls him, he's an elite route runner, 15th, 16th round. I don't mind taking a shot on him, but the Broncos offense in general is not something I'm looking to have much of.
I think Hamilton's ADP is going to come up as the season goes on because I just think he's the more polished football player than Cortland Sutton. I love Sutton's upside, but for this year, I think he's behind Hamilton. Now, Flacco's not going to produce a ton in the passing game anyway, so Hamilton doesn't have much of a ceiling, but just in terms of being useful off the bench, you remember the kind of way Torrey Smith was at times. I think that can kind of be Deshaun Hamilton. I don't mind getting shares of him. I won't have any shares of Sutton. Tags, I know you're the same way, right?
Yeah. Cortland Sutton being drafted as a borderline wide receiver 3 is madness to me. I don't think that Joe Flacco can. First off, I don't think that he produces a consistent fantasy wide receiver. And even when it comes to spot starts, I'm not a big fan. I think that Denver defense is going to be really good under Fangio. But Fangio also made a mistake as a first-year head coach, bringing in an offensive coordinator who it's also his first time being a coordinator. So that's a problem with me. I wanted Fangio to bring in someone with like experience on the offense, and he didn't do that. Granted, this could be lightning in a bottle. It could be an unknown, but I would have preferred, you know, something much more. And can we say that Courtland Sutton is better than Michael Crabtree? No, you can't. I wouldn't say that even, you know, last year. So maybe eventually he becomes better than that, but Crabtree didn't do anything with Joe Flacco last year.
That's a pretty good comp, is Michael Crabtree, by the way.
They're red zone guys. They're like jump ball guys. They can get it, but Courtland Sutton's a bit faster. But again, I don't think that they're going to be passing the ball a whole lot in Denver. I think they're going to be leaning on that defense a lot under Fangio. So they have a really brutal schedule too. Like Courtland Sutton is going to see some top tier cornerbacks throughout the year. So yeah, for me, he's like a wide receiver 4-5 type guy rather than the borderline wide receiver 3 that he's being drafted as.
Now, Tags, obviously, I don't think we need to talk about Noah Fant. He's a rookie tight end. I just don't really see a need outside of best ball. Like, I guess he's a top 30 option, so you could draft him, but I'm not excited. But these running backs, I don't have any shares of Philip Lindsay or Royce Freeman. And the reason why is where Royce Freeman's going, I'd rather take Ronald Jones. I'd rather take even Adrian Peterson, right?
I have Lindsay. I have some shares at Lindsay, and I think Elliott hit the nail on the head there in the fact that I'm taking him because he started falling in drafts, where it's like if he was going as a top 20 running back, I think there was too much risk associated with him. But getting him as like the RB24 off the board, I'll take Lindsay there. Like, I understand.
You're taking him over David Montgomery? You're taking him over Sony Michel?
I would take Sony Michel over him, but David Montgomery, that's the territory he belongs in to me because they're both going to be competing for carries and targets. But Lindsay, here's the issue. Lindsay's a better receiver than Royce Freeman is. Like, that's not a question to me. And Lindsay was able to do some damage on first and second down last year. So knowing that he could stay on the field for all three downs is something that's appealing. And that's why I think he leads that timeshare. But again, as a top 20 back, no. But if you talk to me about a guy that I feel like can live up to that low-end RB2, high-end RB3 numbers, I think Philip Lindsay should be there, and we already know that he has top 12 upside.
You know, I don't mind Lindsay. I've got him in that range with Mark Ingram, David Montgomery, Lamar Miller, but I'd rather have Latavius Murray, James White, Tariq Cohen. I'm drafting all three of those guys over Lindsay.
So, Bobby, I've mentioned before, and Elliot, I know I haven't talked to you about this, but I'm going to be releasing an article. I think it's going to be next week, or I can't remember, but I've done the research for it based on where players got their carries on the field and their expected output. If an average running back got the carries and or receptions that they did on a certain area of the field, there's an expected fantasy point output. The players who led that category last year, listen to the names that are surrounded with Philip Lindsay. Melvin Gordon, number 1. Todd Gurley, 2. Kareem Hunt, 3. Aaron Jones, 4. Philip Lindsay, 5. Tariq Cohen, 6. Alvin Kamara, 7. Kenyon Drake, 8. Nick Chubb, 9. And Christian McCaffrey, 10. Those are names you want to be associated with. Royce Freeman is nowhere near those names.
When I see him in the 6th round, I have to take him. It's just a situation where the upside, there's so much upside at that cost. Where, you know, I've seen him go behind guys like Rashad Penny, and I have to take him over him.
I would agree with that, definitely. Okay, let's move on to the Oakland Raiders, last team here in the AFC West. And I don't know how this is going to go with Antonio Brown, guys.
I think Brown's the kind of receiver that's going to be good enough wherever he goes. But, you know, he's unlikely to be wide receiver 1, right? He's not going to see that 170 targets in Oakland. He's not going to have that downfield threat. Now, Derek Carr is due for some positive regression. And I think, you know, end of the 2nd, top of the 3rd ADP, where I've seen him kind of go recently. And, like, the best ball championship is what I've been doing most of. So that tends to be the drafts I'm referencing. But I think he's got upside baked in there. You know, the big debate right now, whether it's FanDuel and DraftKings sports books about him versus Juju Smith. I'd probably lean Juju a bit, but I'm comfortable drafting Antonio Brown. My favorite late Raider is Darren Waller, the tight end, you know, former wide receiver. It's just a situation where he's free. He's like one of the last tight ends to go off the board. We've seen Carr use Cook in a similar role, so I really like his possibility of being a big part of that offense this year for the cost associated with getting him.
I think his ADP is going to fly up north because Matthew Berry is a really big fan of him. And, you know, whatever you think about Matthew Berry, a lot of people do listen to him. And I think he's got a point here with Waller. I agree with you, Elliot. He's got a lot of athleticism for this tight end position. And I think there are going to be targets to be had there. You look after Antonio Brown, it's Tyrell Williams. It's Hunter Renfrow. It's really ugly. I think Waller's going to get plenty of targets here. So I've moved him into my top 20. He might climb a little bit higher. Now, Tags, let me ask you this, okay? What's the over-under on how many passes Derek Carr throws over 5 yards? Like 12?
It better change from last year. Like, there was legitimately a game where he had, I think it was like 2 yards. I'm not making this up. There was like 2 yards that he had that were before the catch. Like, essentially, I'm not kidding. Like, the thing is, it obviously hurts him when he dumps off behind the line of scrimmage, because then it's like a -3. But, like, I'm not joking. It was ridiculous. I can't remember the game it was. But Derek Carr, Elliott's right in the fact Derek Carr is due for some positive regression. And here's the stat I have on that. There were 12 quarterbacks who threw for at least 4,000 yards last year. Derek Carr was one of them. And of those quarterbacks, just two of them did not throw for at least 25 touchdowns. One was Eli Manning, who, well, Eli. And then you have Derek Carr, where it's like, can he, you know, if he has those 25 touchdowns, we might look at him a little bit different. And then you add Antonio Brown. I don't like Tyrell Williams, but he's an upgrade over what they had. So it's like, you start looking at that. You look at Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs is going to eat up some of those targets. I'm not a big Darren Waller guy. I don't think that there's going to be much production with Josh Jacobs now at running back. Jalen Richard's probably going to be mixed in a little bit. So those receptions that are tied to the running backs are correlated with the tight ends, not so much the receivers. So Derek Carr, he's someone that's interesting, okay? Like, I've been avoiding the Raiders just because I don't believe in Gruden. I don't believe in Greg Olson in terms of them calling an offense. But
Carr's a really good QB3 in my mind.
A QB2. If you're going to, like, wait at QB2 and you want to take Derek Carr, because he has there's no chance he loses his job this year. That's not going to happen. Like, they could draft a quarterback next year, but Carr.
What are you talking about, dude? They got Nathan Peterman on their team.
I mean, that's a Gruden move, 100%.
That's how you know we've talked about a lot of players, when you get a Nathan Peterman fantasy football reference.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, guys. Anyone else you want to talk about? I guess we should probably touch on Josh Jacobs and where you're drafting him, Elliott.
I'm okay with him in the fourth round, just because if you look historically, running backs taken in the first round get a ton of work. He's a very talented pass catcher. You know, his numbers weren't necessarily impressive in college or in the combine, but I'm a believer in his talent. He signed his contract. He'll get in there in plenty of time. I anticipate him putting up, you know, borderline RB1, RB2 numbers. And it's a situation for me where, at cost, I think he's the cheapest guy that has RB1 upside. So I'm willing to take a shot on him, because I'm not that worried about game script. This Raiders defense is really bad, but I anticipate him being able to be worked into the pass game.
I agree. I've got quite a few shares of Josh Jacobs, including in the Scott Fishbowl. I took him as my running back 4, believe it or not. He dropped that far. And I've got him RB17 right now. I keep flipping him and Devonta Freeman at 17 and 18, but he's right after Leonard Fournette, Damian Williams, Marlon Mack. I think that's a tier drop off there. But Tags, what do you think about Josh Jacobs? He's in your top 20, right?
Yeah, he's actually right at 20. He's in that tier. It's Sony Michel, Devonta Freeman, Kerryon Johnson, Josh Jacobs. That's the tier I have him in. I think that Jacobs has more upside than Kerryon, because I think there's a chance that Jacobs is like a 320 touch running back this year. I don't think Kerryon's getting there, but we also don't know if Jacobs can handle that. We don't. We haven't seen him do that. We didn't see it at Alabama. You know, he was always fresh coming on the field. You know, he held out for, you know, he's going to be there for training camp. But I don't know if he's that running back. I don't know if they involve Jalen Richard more than we think. I don't know if they brought back Doug Martin to share the workload, kind of like they did with Marshawn Lynch at the start of the year, where Martin was getting, you know, 6 to 10 touches per game. You know, all that stuff is factored in. And that's why, to me, Jacobs, the reason he falls behind Devonta Freeman, especially, and Sony Michel, is because he's part of a worse offense. You know, I know New England's going to be a top 8 scoring offense. I know Atlanta's going to be up there. Oakland, I cannot say that about. Therefore, it limits the total upside that you can actually get with Jacobs. But I have no problem if you want to draft him as an RB2.
Yeah, and I don't think Jalen Richard's going away either. Elliott, it was a pleasure having you on the show. Really appreciate you taking the time to come on.
This is a blast, guys. You know, whenever you want me on, I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, thank you, Elliott. It's a blast having you on, and I really love that you like David Moore a lot, too. All right, guys, and thanks to the sponsor of today's show, PristineAuction.com. Remember, you can get $5 off. Enter that registration code, FANTASYPROS, all one word, when you sign up. It's free to sign up. You only pay when you actually win a bid. For Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Hey parents, looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.